Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Hey, Mona, Rebecca, is it just me, or has there been a lot of buzz lately around direct EB5 projects?
Well, Mark, as the Regional Center program has presently, and we hope temporarily, lapsed, the direct program has been given an awful lot of attention. This is perhaps one of the first times it has been given so much attention.
Yeah, I must agree with you, Mona, because traditionally what we have seen is that 93% plus investors have gone into regional center projects, which I think is why there are many misconceptions out there about direct pool projects.
Yeah, even with attorneys. So I think it's the figures, USCIS figures, it's probably more like 95% of the investors go into regional center projects. And there's a very small percentage in direct pooled and entrepreneurial.
And what we want to try to do in this particular episode is we want to highlight some of the elements of direct pooled projects. And we're going to do that using 5 real-world examples from existing projects in various industries.
Right. And these 5 projects are at different stages of development, different locations, and different sizes.
I'd just like to say first, we want to put a disclaimer out there that we're not advertising or promoting any project. This is for informational purposes only.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
When we mention direct projects, again, I will bring lawyers into this. A lot of people just think of entrepreneurial projects. They don't even consider direct pool projects. And so today we are just discussing direct pool projects. We would have a separate podcast on entrepreneurial projects at a later stage.
Right. And we hope to have many.
But for now, I think it's fair to say that with the uncertainty facing the regional center program, direct projects have become popular because of its permanency, which means it's written into law and it's not going to change.
So if the direct route is permanent and has many advantages, such as the geographical scope, which we're going to discuss later in this episode, why has the regional center program become so popular over the years?
There are many reasons why the regional center program became so popular, not to mention many of these huge developers who decided that it was a wonderful way to find alternative cheap capital. But one of the main reasons is the fact that job creation was so much easier in a regional center context. And we'll go through this. Again, it depends on the industry. But industries like real estate have a real problem in bringing in investment through the direct program, because the direct program is basically operational. So we're looking at industries or projects which base their job creation from operations. So it's not really possible to have huge raises in projects like this in the same way that it is in a real estate type of project.
Yeah, we can have much more jobs are created in regional center projects, where you can get more investors. And I think another issue, Mona, too, that we'll probably discuss later in this series is that it's easier with the corporate structure going through a regional center versus having a direct pooled.
Right, right. Well, we do mention it with a couple of our projects today, because the corporate structure is a huge reason why people do prefer the regional center program. I would also suggest, Rebecca, that a lot of times people don't understand the advantages that you can have in a direct type of project.
Yes, Mona, there are many advantages with a direct pool project. And we're going to start with what we consider a traditional direct pool project with Everest EB5 Capital LLC.
Right. And just to avoid any confusion up front for the listener, I want to make it clear that Everest EB5 and Philly Medical are essentially the same thing. So we may use those terms and corporate names interchangeably. And helping us with that is Dr. Lee and Dr. Wang.
So welcome, Dr. Lee and Dr. Wang. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, very nice to hear your voice again, Mona. It was really nice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dr. Lee, tell the listener a little bit about your project.
The project is called Everest EB5 Capital LLC. That's the new company we created for this project. The job of this project is to create a urgent care. It's a medical service, including family care and urgent care services for the underserved area in Philadelphia, suburban area that's called Upper Darby.
Wonderful. And I know you opened not so long ago, but how large is the whole project?
The size of the space is 13,000 square feet. Right. We renovated into three parts. One is urgent care. The other one is an adult daycare. The third one is a physical therapy, occupational therapy facility. So they are all comprehensive medical care, helping each other in the business.
Great, Dr. Lee. So with all the facilities and the space that you have, and this being a direct project, how easy was it for the project to create all these direct jobs?
See, the business we are in is a labor-intensive job sector. So we need a lot of people to work in order for us to operate the business, especially on the urgent care side. We need a nurse's aide, medical assistant, doctors, also physical therapy. We need a physical therapist, physical therapy aide, billing. We need caregiver to give care to the seniors. They are attending the adult daycare center. So we have almost 200 seniors right now. So the ratio will be 1 to 5, 1 to 7. You know, every 5 to 7 seniors, we will need 1 to 2 aide. It's a labor intensive, so we need a lot of jobs, a lot of people to take care of our patient and our clients. For that reason, we need a lot of jobs, and we already created all those jobs.
Yeah. Right. So Dr. Lee, my question is having so many direct jobs, does it affect the revenue?
No, it isn't. Yeah, actually, because all those people are working and serving the clients, so we are able to see more and more patients and more clients, you know, during the course of this project.
Yeah, so you can have very successful direct projects.
Correct.
Yeah, and it seems that you also create more jobs than you thought you initially needed?
Yes, definitely. We're still creating new jobs because the project is keep going. And we are expanding, actually. So we will need more jobs.
Can you estimate how many jobs you think you have created thus far?
Yeah, we need 70 jobs. We already created about 85 to 90 jobs so far.
Yeah, that's a great question.
We're probably more than that.
We have about 100 jobs right now, full-time equivalent.
I haven't counted since last time.
In terms of headcount, we have about 130-ish. Those are including part-time. Mm-hmm. So full-time equivalent, we have about 100 right now. So we exceed 70 needed.
Yeah. So I love this because not only do we know that the investors who came into your project have received their green cards, but we also know that because you have created all these full-time jobs, that the I-829s will be approved. So I think the third question that any investor would ask is that, do you think you've made enough through revenues to repay investors?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So we have a very successful business and definitely have enough money to repay them back.
Well, actually, our profit is so healthy. And actually, we are, before this call, actually, we have a plan to ask Mona, can we return their investment earlier?
And we love to hear those kind of calls.
Yeah,
we love operational projects.
We actually make a very, very healthy profit. Yeah. And, you know, we make a lot of money. We pay several million just in tax.
Wow.
So I'm sure Uncle Sam is very happy about that too.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So Dr. Lee, Dr. Wang, thank you so much. It's lovely to hear these type of stories. And we thank you again for coming on EB5 Investment Voice.
Thank you.
You know, Rebecca, if we could take anything away, I think the one thing I would suggest is that people often feel that in order for an EB-5 project to be successful, in order for them to get a return of their capital, it has to be real estate. It has to be a certain hotel or something. But I think these type of projects really show that, no, you can get your money back and you can have a successful project in any industry.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think when you say any industry, you do have to look at the operational effect of it. So a lot of times people think, well, the more jobs I have, will this affect my revenue?
Yeah, exactly.
Or the profitability. Yeah. So I think, though, with Philly Medical, it needs employees. You need to have people there to run this business and in order to be successful. So it really is. This industry really did rely heavily on direct job creation, or as Dr. Lee stated, it's labor intensive.
Right.
Yeah. And I think this is a common thread that I would say to our listeners that you're going to see in all of the projects. We deliberately chose projects in different industries, but not one of these projects are not making money. They're all making money. So it's a question of whether a lot of jobs actually takes away from their revenue or whether it adds to their revenue.
And I think, Mona, you and I have seen plenty of projects out there where we have discussed the same issue with job creation and whether or not it made sense going forward with a direct project.
Yeah, people are skeptical of certain industries. They know that certain industries may make money, but they may be more risky. And that will lead us into our next project, which involves a corporate restaurant. But a lot of our investors get turned off with restaurants.
Yeah, they think it's a volatile industry. But I think as we hear from Vishal, who's coming up next, that you can make some profits with this type of business.
Right. And Vishal has two projects. He has one, which is a corporate restaurant. What do they call it? A kitchen, a corporate kitchen. And the other is a hotel, which was actually a regional center project, which we had to adapt to make it palatable for the direct model.
Joining us now is Vishal Dhar, who interestingly has projects, direct projects in two different industries. So Vishal, let's first talk about the original regional center project in the Catskills and how we got that into a direct project.
Rebecca, firstly, thank you for having me on your podcast. The regional center project that we had was, it's in a very special place called Catskills, which is 2 hours drive from New York City. And it used to be cited as the first tourist destination, and now it's taken a whole revival and seen a lot of traffic that's gone that in that direction. So our first project was 30 single family homes, and they're built on 5-acre parcels, and they're designed by NAVA, which has done some extensive and very interesting work in building in that part of the world. So that's our first project, and that is actually done through the regional center.
Yeah, thanks, Vishal. Well, interestingly, you have another project in the Catskills, which is a hotel, and you've found a way to connect the two projects together.
Mona, we have. And other project is actually in very close proximity to our real estate development. And how we've actually been able to connect them is through services. But I'll tell you a little bit about what that other project is.
Well, I am going to ask you, as the first project was a regional center project, your second was a regional center project, but you've managed to change that over to a direct.
I know, Mona, but it's a pity that the regional center program basically shut down. So as a result, we had to flip. But fortunately, the project itself has direct job creation, and it's something that we could restructure without changing any revenues or any other attributes. It's a project which actually is a hotel with 3 restaurants and a banquet center. And it is what I mentioned, in close proximity to the homes that we are developing. So in addition to the services it offers to our own guests, we're also offering a concierge service to the real estate development called Bear Creek.
That's great. So you can actually create more jobs this way and turn what's a regional center project into something which is more operational.
Absolutely. And that's what we're looking forward to developing. The project itself has 6 months in development before it actually becomes operational. And again, we've used the same developer and architect for this that we've actually using for our Bear Creek single family home development. It's an area that's actually taken a huge amount of traffic, which is seeing a whole new level of entrepreneurship in small streets are being converted. And many restaurants are opening up. So, and it's also in proximity to three large ski destinations. And the one that has the highest traffic in New York State is Hunter. So it's a four-season resort, and we are excited about actually completing it so we can welcome them.
Vishal, just as Rebecca mentioned, you have more than one direct project in a different industry. And the industry we would really consider to be more what we would call traditional direct, which is restaurants in New York City.
That's correct, Mona. So the project that we have in New York City comes out of a history of running 12 restaurants in New York City over the past 10 years.
And okay, so Vishal, before you get into that, for many of our listeners, a lot of investors are skeptical about the restaurant industry. What do you say to that?
Rebecca, the restaurant industry, you know, if you're an independent restaurant and you're operating one single site or managing two, that could potentially be precarious. But what we've developed is a model that actually vertically integrates to a commercial kitchen or a commissary. And when we're operating these eight restaurants, they're as a pool direct investment across these restaurants. And what we are leveraging for this project is the history that we have of running the 12 successful restaurants over the last 10 years. So yes, they are like in every business, I imagine there's some element of risk, and as they are in restaurants as well, but you know, restaurants are equally successful as they are not.
It is that element of risk, though, that I think makes people a little worried, because people do feel that real estate, hotels, there is a little more stability. But when it comes to just a restaurant, Vishal, although you're going to argue that that's where you've made your money.
So Mona, I agree the concerns that people have on restaurants, but this is not a traditional single family owned restaurant. What we've created is a centralized operation to manage restaurants, which actually creates different level of P&L and profitability. And just to illustrate, we have a central kitchen that does all the preparation of all our foods. We have a central logistics team. We have sourcing is centralized. Our marketing teams are centralized. So that actually gives this direct pool investment for EB5 a stable base, as opposed to it being something that could be more precarious in terms of revenue.
So what you're saying, Vishal, is that this is a corporate kitchen. This is not a restaurant.
It is not a restaurant. But the other thing that I do want to mention about this is also, Mona, that what we've identified is two categories. And we have two existing brands which already have validation in New York City and Brooklyn, because they are in highly desirable neighborhoods. And one is Mexican and the other one is pizza. So we are confident, and we're also confident because we've got a history of their performance in other neighborhoods. So that gives us the comfort to take this book out and see how we can get people interested in investing.
And I suppose, as we were saying earlier, location matters. New Yorkers eat.
New Yorkers eat. That is correct.
Vishal, thank you so much for coming on.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
So Mona, from what we heard from Vishal is that you can have a successful restaurant businesses. It really matters on the experience of the developers.
Yeah, I think that's key. But that is something which is important for regional center projects as well as direct. It really goes to any project. The management, experience, location, that's essential to any project.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we have something interesting now. We have another regional center who had to, again, change their model somewhat. We found out, as you will find out, that the change to make it from a regional center program project to a direct project actually suited.
That's right, Mona. And interesting, what we're going to hear is about the geographical scope, which a lot of people at times get confused, especially with a regional center project versus a direct project, but we have seen success and within many locations with the next project.
Now we have Roberto Contreras from Houston EB5. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Mona. Thank you for having me.
Well, Mona, here we have an example of a regional center structuring direct projects. So Roberto, tell us a little bit about Houston EB5 and the projects that you have out there.
Along with your current direct project, too.
Yeah, sure thing. Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, Mona. QCB5 was founded in 2011. We're a vertically integrated regional center, which means that we really only promote projects where we're also a sponsor in the project. We have two companies that are sister companies that we raise money for. Historically, we've raised money for DC Partners for our real estate developments. And most recently, in 2019, we started raising money for our other sister company, Moderno Porcelain Works, which is now our direct offering. We've had to do a little bit of restructuring since the regional center program expired, but it was always a natural fit as most of the jobs that are created through Moderno Porcelain Works are more direct jobs.
So this is more of a manufacturing type project as opposed to a real estate construction, correct?
That's correct. We are in the construction industry. We fabricate and install large format porcelain, which is a relatively new technology.
You have multiple locations throughout the U.S., correct?
That's correct. We have, right now, we have six locations throughout the United States, three of which were actually funded by EB-5. And we're now opening another four locations in the coming months. And that's what we're currently raising for.
Yeah. So here's the interesting thing, which a lot of people don't understand. The advantages of doing it direct, you don't have to worry about the geographical boundaries that you do with a regional center.
Well, yeah, you know, it is still a TEA project in so much as that the location where we're doing the fabrication for the surfacing material, which is where we cut the slabs before they go and get installed, is in a TEA. The difference really being that we're going out from a regional center type of real estate kind of project. The primary difference here is that after we're cutting the material, we're going out and installing it all over the city or all over the region to customers, you know, whether it be households or commercial projects all over the region. So we're not really geographically pinned down to where the fabrication site is. Whereas, you know, if you were to do a more traditional real estate project or a regional center, that very location is your product, right? Your product is your location. So it's a little bit more tied down to that geographical area.
So Roberto, it's easier for you to, you have your project and it's easier for you to go ahead and find a TEA location rather than having to model it and fit it into a TEA.
That's right. It's kind of a natural fit because these fabrication facilities, you know, we need kind of a warehouse kind of space. And most warehouse districts happen to be TEAs anyway. And that was part of the impetus behind us starting to do this offering in 2019 when there were regulatory changes that got much more strict with TEAs. Us being a luxury real estate developer with DC Partners, it was hard to find good luxury, you know, good sites for a luxury project when they got much more strict on the TEAs. And that's when we had Moderno Porcelain Works was just starting and it was really starting to take off. And we said, well, wait a minute, what if we do things differently and don't just offer a traditional real estate investment, rather an operational type business investment. And, you know, as luck would have it, things have started to go well and we've been expanding. And then all of a sudden the regional center program expires. And it turns out that this is really all that's left for us to promote.
So here's my issue though. We've worked a lot with manufacturers and often with manufacturing, because of the necessity of hiring so many people, it does take away from your profit revenue. So what are you using right now to be able to ensure investors that they would be able to have a repayment of their capital?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, in that regard, Mona, you're right, right? As a company expands, you're going to need more employees as that company continues to expand.
Right.
Which in some ways is to the benefit of the EB-5 investors, at least in terms of job creation. And then, of course, you wanted to make sure you have good profits. You want to make sure that you're getting good margins, you know, together with that expansion. And what's exciting about these fabrication facilities is exactly that. It's not the first one. We're not kind of going and learning it all over again. We're just kind of doing a more of a copy paste type of model. So right off the bat, it doesn't take long for one of these facilities to start hitting the margins it needs to. And then from there, it's, you know, sales and then continuing to hire, which isn't the easiest thing. They have to find the right employees and to train them up. But, you know, it's a simple enough path to success from there. And as you mentioned, you know, in order to exit the investors, it's a little bit different from a real estate project in so much as that you don't really have a large market for selling a company like this. Not that we would necessarily want to. It's part of it is the market. The other part is it's not necessarily the business model. And when you go out and you build a commercial real estate building, whether it's a hotel or an office building or an apartment project or condominium building, sooner or later, you're going to end up selling that building or at the very least refinancing the construction debt out. Whereas an operational business, there's no clear timeline for that. So you want to make sure that you're structuring the project in a way that the investors are, there's some sort of incentive for the sponsor to want to pay out the investors, whether it be through operational profits, which can be, the business can be very lucrative, or through a refinance.
Yeah, and there is one thing that people do forget, that in a project like this, you would have less investors. You wouldn't normally have, you know, 30 or 40 investors. You probably have maybe 6 or 7 or 8, which would be easier to pay back.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You know, we're only taking 4 investors per facility. Each facility creates 55 to 60 direct jobs. So we're only taking 4 to sort of be respectful of that buffer that's come to be commonplace in the industry. But yes, you know, 4 investors at the $600,000 level, you know, that's $2.4 million. And, you know, if we hit the projections that we know that we can do, you know, over the next 3-4 years from the initial startup, that's really only a year's worth of profits that it would take to be able to repay that.
All right. Well, thank you, Roberto. It was great hearing from a regional center perspective and changing it into direct projects. And we look forward to hearing more from you later as well.
Thank you guys for having me.
Mark, Rebecca, I'm not sure whether you actually got that at the end, but Roberto's project wasn't just looking for 6 investors. It was looking for 6 investors at 60 different locations.
Right. Instead of going tall, like many regional centers, they're going wide.
And it's something that's not quite easily done with a regional center project due to geographical scope.
That's right. Which we can discuss at a later stage because we don't want to bore you guys. And let's move on to the next project.
Well, I do have one point, Mona, though. I think what we need to get out there for direct projects versus regional center projects is that there's a misconception about the amount. I think
that's
a lot
true.
Of people think with direct projects, you have to go with the higher amount, which would be the 1 million versus the 500,000 level. And that's incorrect. It has to do with where the project is located, as if any project, direct or regional center, is in a targeted employment area or TEA, you will invest the lower amount.
Right. The focus is on the economic development of the area, not so much the structure of the project.
You know, I've heard many people, again, even regional centers and lawyers who have said this, that if you do a direct, it has to be the higher amount. And I really don't understand where they get that. You're absolutely right.
So next, we're going to hear from Robert Pearson from New Ride Transportation Group and to see how the direct pool project works within another industry, the transportation industry.
And now joining us is Rob Pearson from New Ride's Tesla direct pool project.
Hi, Rob. Tell us a little bit about the Tesla project.
So New Ride Transportation Group is now launching this project, which is based upon the acquisition of 50 Tesla Y long-range electric vehicles. They will be operating in our already very robust operations system, which is providing for-hire vehicle services to the business community and also to consumers in general, and development of a state-of-the-art collision center for collision and glass. So it will have a 50,000 square foot footprint, and we will be a premier state-of-the-art collision center for the electric vehicle community, as well as the community at large in transportation in New York.
And this is a direct pool, Rob, correct? Not a regional center project.
That's right, Mona. And we've been in this business for a while as far as direct pool projects. We have operating direct pool projects now, and we've been doing so since 2014.
So it's good to have some experience, I suppose, because you understand how USCIS likes to see them structured and how the job creation works, et cetera.
Yeah, no question about it. Like I said, we have a lot of experience in not only the transportation business, but in this direct pooled structure. Since 2014, we've been able to deliver 70 green cards, and that's a vast majority of the applications that we've made. So we successfully not only deliver the project and the revenues, but also come through on the EB5 green card side.
So you've been on our podcast before anyway, Rob. We know. And you've discussed transportation. But for the purposes of this particular podcast, and Rebecca and I have just been talking about how important it is for the developer to really be in the industry, understand how the industry works, as well as how understand how EB-5 works, because direct pooled is difficult.
Yeah. So again, the transportation business here in New York is huge, $42 billion annually. And the collision center market nationally is huge, $37 billion annually. This business is very compliance heavy. There's a lot of I's to dot and T's to cross. And with our experience in not only being able to provide that compliance, but to deliver a really quality, safe product, this will just be another kind of leading initiative that we do where we're adding to the electric vehicle community in the FHV market, the for-hire vehicle market.
Yeah, that is, again, something that Rebecca and I have spoken about, that often areas, it's not just your area, perhaps an area relating to pharmaceutical projects and whatever, you have compliances and you have to deal with that. And sometimes the corporate structure doesn't quite work with the way EB-5 direct pooled works. How have you managed to tackle that?
So in our business, a direct pool project works really, really well. I mean, it's all about creating jobs and getting into operations very quickly, as opposed to other projects that may be out there that take time to develop, real estate-based projects, et cetera. Once we acquire these Teslas, they will be in operations really, really quickly. And so we have the clients. I personally, as business development officer, bring on these clients. So they are the best companies, law firms, transportation businesses, et cetera, in the city of New York, and they're demanding more and more of our vehicles, and everyone wants to ride in Tesla.
What is the advantage? I mean, why electric vehicles here?
The reason for electric vehicles is, number one, it makes sense business-wise. These are terrific Tesla vehicles. They have long-range mobility. They're just quality vehicles that everybody wants to ride in. But more than that, you know, looking at a couple of other things. Number one, the $1 trillion bill that just came into play by President Biden, it was signed into law, allocates $7.5 billion towards electric vehicle charging stations and other support for the electric vehicle and electric transportation in general. New York State also has massive incentives, and it has a real big support structure for this. We're ahead of the game in that, you know, we've been driving and operating electric hybrids and other vehicles, Priuses and Avalons and Camrys, but we're now taking the next step. We're now going to be fully involved in what's to come, which is a carbon neutral environment operating the best vehicles, which is Tesla. So we already have clients for our business. We're just going to transition them to these amazing Tesla vehicles.
You know, Rob, you mentioned that your project, your industry is heavily connected to operations, but is there anything which gives you perhaps an edge over other projects in this area?
Sure. One of the things I'm most proud of about New Ride is our technology and our technology team. So we have a really robust team internally, and then we have an amazing logistics technology partner externally that we call upon from time to time as we need to develop and expand our services. We have applications, we have APIs connected. APIs are just connections with other technology platforms. We're able to do all this complicated stuff that I'm not going to get into very, very easily. So working with these major TNCs or these other fleets and fulfilling services for them, as we also do for our regular corporate clients, it's just very easy to do here and allows my function as business development officer to be much, much easier than it would be with a company that does not have technology like we do.
Well, Rob, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
You know, Rebecca, this is one project where compliance is such an integral part that it being a direct pooled could really be problematic.
Yeah, and this is where corporate structuring is very, very important. That's why we don't see a lot of direct projects out there.
It's true. But this, again, is one industry which is, like the Philly Medical Center, is labor intensive. So it naturally has a lot of jobs.
Yeah, and I think it also needs to make business sense. Again, you know, does it need all these jobs? Yes, you need to have the drivers, you need to have dispatch, you need to have administrative staff working and making this business successful.
Right. It's a very logistics-heavy company, which is a benefit to the EB-5 goals of creating jobs.
Yeah, and obviously having the technology element as well brings a different level to the whole project.
Yeah, and we're mentioning transportation the entire time, but it has another element to it, like you said, another industry sector with the technology.
Yeah, you're right, Rebecca. We've mentioned technology-driven regional centers before in our 5+ year history of this show. And IT makes for a great competitive component, not only for regional centers, but for direct projects as well.
It is. But there's also the area of creating direct jobs in an existing business, which can be a little tricky.
It can. And that's why we have Krishna Garamella with us.
Yeah, who's going to discuss just that. Welcome, KK.
Thank you. Thank you, Mona Rebecca, for including IT into your podcast.
Well, it certainly has that it factor.
Yeah, move over real estate.
Oh, you bet.
So, Krishna, or rather KK, tell us a little bit about your project.
Absolutely. So, TADA is the name of the project. What they do, sometimes it gets too technical. And I would like to take a scenario to explain what the folks at TADA do. Now, when you're ordering a product in Amazon, you know, Amazon manages it to ship it in 2 hours or the next day. How do they do that? How do they know somebody from a certain area is going to order a certain product, and they have to make sure the inventory is already in the vicinity or in the area to be shipped in 2 hours or 2 days, right? So what this algorithm does is heavy forecasting. They use a lot of data to kind of tell the companies or the enterprise that this is the kind of inventory you need to have and in this area. So when the order comes in, this is the time of availability that you can forecast. So these are certain things that TADA does, not just for one enterprise, various industries.
Yeah, that's really interesting. But tell me something. This is an existing business. So you're doing a direct EB5 project on an existing business. First of all, let me ask you a little bit. What do you find out the advantages of that? And then I'm sure, Rebecca, we have lots to discuss on the disadvantages.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So now we initially thought of a regional center, but this project, this is an existing business. They're, you know, spinning off a new business exclusive for EB5, and they're creating about 220 plus jobs, direct jobs. So it made more sense for the project to be direct rather than paying the regional center and going and jumping the extra hoops here. So if that makes sense.
It does.
Okay, KK, though, TADA has been in existence for 20 plus years, right?
That's, and also in the TEA area. And they have created some enormous, tremendous revenues. You know, they have existing revenues. They have a lot of jobs that they're going to create. The reason technology is booming right now is because they have a business continuity plan. And COVID has opened eyes in terms of enterprise. And a lot of people are going towards digitizing. And TADA just does that.
Okay. So, Rebecca, what are the disadvantages, though, of using an existing business?
Well, that's where we kind of run into some issues with job creation, right? You, with an existing business, a lot of our clients come and say, well, I can shut this business down and then create the jobs in the new LLC or the new commercial enterprise. That's something you cannot do. You have to create new positions and new jobs. You can't just take from another business. TADA, as an example, what we're seeing is that, look, they're expanding and need the jobs. They're creating new jobs. So that's the difference we have to see. You can't just take jobs from existing businesses.
That's true. So let me ask you something, KK. You're saying you're going to create a lot of jobs. What type of jobs do you see them creating? And would these have been created anyway, or are you just creating them because of the EB5?
There's so much of demand. So the jobs that are going to be created are going to be in operations, which is in HR, in finance, in technology, in customer support, in sales. So it is pretty much end to end, and they're going to create these jobs anyways. So, you know, why not help some EB5 investors take the benefit, because the jobs are anyways being created.
But over the years, what we have seen with investors is that they are reluctant to invest in IT, as they find it can be profitable, KK, but risky at the same time. Or perhaps they just don't understand where the revenue or the payback comes.
Yeah, so KK, with TADA, with, you know, your 25 plus years experience in being in the business, how is it that you're going to repay investors?
So as you see, Rebecca, the company has always been profitable. This is a SaaS company, meaning software as a subscription which means they get paid on a license fee. And usually the enterprises who sign up for this software subscription, they sign up for 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, and the licensing cost is always appreciating. So these companies are heavily valued in the marketplace. So the founders can always dilute a little bit of their equity to pay back, or they might even pay back from the profit the company is making.
Okay, KK, thank you very much. I'm sure we're going to have you back as we do want to talk about IT again in more detail. But thank you very much for coming on and explaining these issues to us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much once again for accommodating IT. IT might be new and it might be sometimes difficult to understand, but it is the best thing that's going to happen going forward in the EB-5 industry. And I truly believe that.
You know, Mona, from listening to Krishna, or KK as we call him, what really stood out was that this is from an existing business, right? We have an existing business, and then seeing how we can create more jobs and adding more to a successful business.
Yeah, that's true. Again, it's a little complicated and it's not the most straightforward corporate structure to put together. But Rebecca, one of the important pointers that a lot of people do forget is that you need to show all your risk factors. You need to have a PPM. Just because it's a direct pull project, sometimes people feel that you don't need to have a PPM. You still do.
Yeah, these are still investors. It doesn't matter if it's a direct project, a direct pooled, or a regional center project, you still need to disclose to your investors.
Right. It is a private securities offering.
Right. Even though we're talking about direct projects vice regional centers, the rules hasn't changed here.
You know, Mark, Rebecca, I think from listening to all of our developers and these projects, we could conclude one thing. It really doesn't matter whether it's a direct pooled or a regional center project. The factors that an investor looks at are very, very similar.
I couldn't agree with you more, Mona. I mean, it's a business at the end of the day, whether it goes through a regional center or not, that has to do with job creation. But the factors of the business itself and who you're looking into matters.
Right. And the business model could suit a direct, you know, rather than a regional center for many reasons. Sometimes the capital stack works better for a direct pool than it does for a regional center. And on other occasions, there are some direct pools that we have seen and we've worked on where, for example, a bunch of friends will put money together and they will purchase a hotel and then they will create jobs. Now, if that was a regional center, the money put aside for the purchase of the hotel cannot be counted towards the job creation, but you can count it within a direct pooled sort of scenario.
Yes. And other factors, you know, the viability of the project. You know, you're looking at the location. Does it make sense to have this project where it is? Does it make sense to have the project? You have to look at all of that and the profitability, we discussed earlier, having the jobs, are they needed? All of that you have to look at as a whole.
Yeah, because the emphasis in a direct pool really is on operational. And if you don't have revenue, then you aren't going to be able to pay your employees. And of course, you have the chicken and egg scenario where if you don't have the employees, you're not going to make the revenue.
Yeah. You know, I hope our listeners out there listen to this and take in and really don't look down on direct projects.
They shouldn't be nervous. They shouldn't be nervous of direct projects, I feel.
Shouldn't be nervous.
Yeah, they can be just as successful as a regional center project.
Direct projects can be just as successful as regional center projects. I just thought that bared repeating, perhaps even more so. A lot of the same critical factors come into play, as we said, right? You got business model, you got job creation, how is the capital stacked up? And of course, the operational factors are probably more of a concern with direct projects. You need revenue, you need cash flow to pay for the operational expense of employees, and it's those employees, the job creation, that really makes EB-5 work. Well, Mona, Rebecca, I guess that is it for us. We've looked at 5 different projects across various different industries with different factors, and I hope you, loyal EB-5 Investment Voice listener, come away with this episode with some good informational knowledge to help you make a more informed decision in the future. Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.